This is a Triple J podcast.
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic. Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest.
If no, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
Desi Freeman found the fugitive that's kept Australia wandering for 7 months, shot dead by police after a massive standoff. So what happened? And how did Desi Freeman manage to live so long undetected? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Coming up, we're getting into this and hearing from experts, people who used to work in the police.
Because he survived so long by himself, like 6 or 7 months, the sovereign citizen community and right-wing extremists, they'll see him as a bit of a hero.
Yeah, I'm keen to hear your thoughts on this one, especially if this was a story you have been following closely. Were you surprised by this development? Message in 0439 757 555. First, though, we're going to get into fuel.
Hack.
More game measures and worst-case scenarios are on the agenda today as the Prime Minister meets with state and territory leaders.
On Triple J.
Yeah, after weeks of high fuel prices, we're being told relief is on the way. The Prime Minister announcing a cut to the tax put on every litre of fuel. For the next 3 months, the fuel excise, as it's called, is going to be reduced by 26 cents a litre. Anthony Albanese and state and territory leaders have also agreed to a plan for the government to take actions to limit fuel use. What does that mean? How will all of this work? And more importantly, exactly how much relief are you going to get? Well, in a bit, we're going to hear from the Shadow Treasurer, Tim Wilson. But first, Hack reporter Evelyn Manfield's been looking into it.
We all know that fuel's expensive, but for some people it's crippling. Like 28-year-old Tam Stevens from regional Victoria, who's had to quit her job.
I'm actually getting paid less than what I was putting in my car each day to get to work.
Tam works in finance from contract to contract, and from her tiny town of Pura Pura, it takes up to 2 hours to get to work in either Ballarat or Melbourne.
It doesn't make any sense, so I just thought, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not sure what to do. I might have to get Centrelink or something.
It's that or helping out on her partner's wheat and sheep farm.
Not my forte or my area of experience, but I guess I'll be picking up the tools, you know.
But there too, the fuel crisis is also taking a hit.
We only got half of our fuel delivered that we ordered, so they've actually rationed us without even telling us.
Right now, prices for unleaded are hitting $2.60 or more across pretty much everywhere, while hundreds of servos are out of at least one type of fuel. Today, the Prime Minister and the state and territory leaders had a big meeting. Anthony Albanese then announced a halving of the tax put on every litre of fuel by 26.3 cents. It'll make servo prices for everyone cheaper, but it'll also cost the budget $2.5 billion.
We're making fuel cheaper today because we understand that Australians are under serious pressure.
The government's also saying the ACCC will keep an eye on prices to make sure the servos pass the cut on. On top of that, there's a four-point plan. We're at level two, which is about voluntary choices to use less fuel, like you should take the bus or walk if you can.
We really also want to encourage Australians who can to take public transport to help save fuel for the areas and industries that need it.
But while scrapping your Easter holiday would save fuel, the PM's also saying don't do that.
People should enjoy their Easter. And it's important as well that we keep the economy going. Easter's an important time for tourism, destinations, for jobs.
Levels three and four get tougher. There could eventually be a stronger crackdown on demand to make sure fuel is there for critical use. But as of today,
we are substantially away from that.
Because fuel's coming in.
Literally, shiploads of fuel. Got to be careful how I say that. Shiploads of fuel are arriving.
There are other changes too, with governments in Victoria and Tassie making public transport free temporarily. But not everyone has options like that, like Luke Barbuto, who works at a winery in the Hunter Valley.
Can't exactly pick the grapes from your lounge room, so.
He's trying to walk to the shops and carpool, but he still needs to drive to work from Newcastle.
It's basically consuming about 10% of my take-home pay now, with just how much I'm driving and, yeah, the cost of fuel.
I went to the media conference today and asked the Prime Minister and Treasurer if there'll be more cost of living help coming, especially for young people in the regions.
We always consider cost of living measures, but one of the things about July 1 as well, of course, is that our tax cuts come in, our top-up tax cuts, that will make a difference, particularly for low and middle income earners.
One of the reasons why we landed on this approach to providing more cost of living relief in what we're announcing today is because for people who unavoidably have to drive longer distances, the benefit will be greater.
This is Hack on Triple J.
Hack political reporter Evelyn Manfield reporting from Canberra. Got a lot of messages coming through on Hack's Instagram. You're telling us what this fuel situation is meaning for you on a daily basis. Siobhan saying, I recently took a contract at a hospital 2 hours from my house. Now I have to rethink how often I go home, Siobhan says. Zoe saying, I drive 30 k's into town to work as a midwife every day and then still have to pay for parking. Someone else, I have mates risking their lives and opting to drive their motorbikes despite extremely heavy rain that we've been getting. And Josh saying, I just started a new career where I have to drive to job sites. Our country is exploiting us. Why work hard for anything, Josh says. Look, we did ask to speak with the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, the Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, and the Energy Minister, Chris Bowen. They weren't available to speak with Hack. We do have the Shadow Treasurer, Tim Wilson, with us now. Tim Wilson, welcome to Hack.
Thank you for having me.
The government's announced it's halving the fuel excise for 3 months. That's what the Coalition's been calling for. So presumably you think they've done the right thing here.
Well, it's definitely welcome. The only critique we have is that when we put it forward, we proposed a series of offset measures so that it wouldn't be inflationary. Today, in question time, I asked the Treasurer whether he had offered any offsets so that it wouldn't be inflationary, and he, you know, blathered and ignored answering the question, which means that it's only going to compound the problem of inflation that Australians are already experiencing, which is leading to higher interest rates.
Is the real issue here that we just don't know what impact this is going to have on inflation for some time, at least a few weeks?
We know from the entirety of economic history that if you have a significant increase in liquid fuel costs that go into freighting food from farms to distribution centres, from distribution centres to warehouses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it's going to have an inflationary cost on the cost of goods when you get to your trolley at the supermarket.
The government's gone maybe a bit further than what Angus Taylor was saying he wanted, because Angus Taylor was asking for the heavy vehicle charge to be cut in half for 3 months, where the government's saying we're going to scrap it for 3 months. Was your plan offering enough support to truckies and to Australians?
The short answer is yes, because, of course, we were addressing the fundamental problems being driven by international events, but we weren't seeking to stoke inflation.
So what do you do in the short term then? Because there are other countries like New Zealand who are offering targeted support to families in particular. Do you think that maybe we need targeted support here in Australia?
Well, that's precisely what we were seeking to do with our proposal of a 50% cut on the fuel excise.
But more targeted than that, in particular to young Australians, for example, who are telling us right now that many of them can't go to work, they can't go to uni, some are even camping at their workplaces just so they don't have to pay for fuel.
And this is real. I mean, you've seen the Victorian government, as an example, offering free public transport to incentivise people to, one, get off the roads, and secondly, to use alternative arrangements. Everybody's going to be in different sets of circumstances. And, of course, we're still watching as this evolves. We're all hoping this crisis ends soon.
But would you support more targeted support for vulnerable Australians?
Well, I'm not going to give a blank check to handing more money out when so far the only thing the government has done is to provide a measure that doesn't have offsets for inflation, because that just means you're giving with one hand and you're taking with the other, and that's the problem with the government's approach. So I don't want to see us in a situation where I'm giving the government a blank check to keep stoking inflation. They kept the inflation fire alive by pouring debt petrol on it before this crisis. As a consequence, the flame of inflation has been burning. I want to see it snuffed out, because every time inflation persists, interest rates go up.
But is it okay enough to say, well, we just don't want to stoke inflation, but we don't have any real support in mind for these Australians who are doing it tough? Because if you are struggling right now and you're looking to the coalition and wondering what your plan is, what can you offer them?
We already offered, we led the conversation around the diesel fuel rebate. The hope is that this conflict will end and we will watch it as things continue to move on. But the government keeps saying to us there's more fuel now than there was at the start of this crisis. So we want that, and we made calls on this today to make sure that the fuel's being moved to petrol bowsers so people can get access to it with the reduction in the cost of the excise, so that people can afford to pay fuel.
What about rationing of fuel? Is that something the coalition supports?
Well, at this point, the government has said that they have more fuel in Australia today than they did at the start of the crisis. So I just can't see why we would race to that conversation until that is no longer the case, unless the government, of course, has been lying to us and they don't have more fuel than they did at the start of the crisis.
All right, this is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Shadow Treasurer Tim Wilson. We're talking fuel, cost of living. Got someone on the text line now saying the fuel discount will just drive a demand in fuel purchases, which will drive prices up more. It'll result in the same or higher prices anyway. That's what that person is saying. Also hearing from you on Hack's Instagram. Eamon saying, my fuel bill last week was $450. I drive 1.5 hours to work each day. And Molly saying, I have to ride my bike to work now and it takes an hour. Tim Wilson, politicians like Senator David Pocock are calling for a 25% tax on gas exports. And this idea has started to gain a bit of support from politicians across the board. You're the Shadow Treasurer. Do you support a gas tax?
Well, it would very much depend on how these things are ultimately going to be designed, and I'm not sure that's necessarily the best way to address this. There are already royalties paid for gas that is exported. People like to say, well, we're going to talk about what the income tax is paid or what this excise is paid, but they ignore the fact there are other taxes or other royalty arrangements paid to states.
So, do you think these big multinational companies, though, are paying enough tax?
Well, there will never be a time that I've ever found in Australian history where people don't think that large companies and multinationals are not paying enough. What we need is investment to get the fuel to fuel the Australian economy. That's expensive. We need to make it attractive to get that investment, because the big risk, as we've seen with things like oil in Australia, is we have none of that done domestically really anymore. And then in the middle of a fuel crisis, everybody turns around and says, why don't we have enough domestic sovereign supply of fuel?
But does it bother you that Australia gets more taxes from beer, which is a headline that has really concerned a lot of people around Australia, than it does from the biggest gas exporters in the world?
The challenge is that that's simply not true. We're looking at one specific tax rather than the full spectrum of taxes that are paid, as well as royalties.
But Tim Wilson, like Chris Richardson, saying this PRRT, the Petroleum Resource Rent Tax, initially was a great idea, but it's failed and it's not keeping up and we're not getting as much money as we could be. It could be billions and billions of dollars a year, $17 billion annually, according to some estimations. Are we missing out here?
Well, gas currently pays about $21.9 billion worth of tax, so that's in excess of the number you put forward.
But we're talking specifically about the PRRT, which is the tax that, you know, a lot of people have been talking about and saying needs reform. Do you think we need to be looking at this area? Because, you know, we've got some of your colleagues, like Andrew Hastie, saying the Liberals should be open-minded to increasing taxes on gas companies. Do you agree with him?
Well, there are always going to be times where we're looking at taxes and seeing what's most effective, because there's a worst-case scenario, which is we don't get any gas extracted, so we don't get anything paid through the PRRT. Remember, Labor introduced a mining tax in 2010. I know for a lot of listeners, that's a long time ago. They introduced this whopping new tax, and what it did was raise nothing, because what it did was stifle investment, discourage activity. We don't want that. You've got to get a sensible balance, so you're getting people building industries that grow the prosperity of Australia, that pay tax and contribute to the welfare of the country.
So was it wrong of your leader, Angus Taylor, to rule it out then? If you've got to consider everything as you're saying and make a decision down the track, is it not the right thing for Angus Taylor to just say, no, we're not doing that?
All Angus Taylor said was, if you tax something, you'll get less of it. That's a pretty basic principle in economics. So if you actually want to incentivise industries to grow, you don't add layer upon layer upon layer of regulation and taxation. We want an industry that's viable and sustainable to support sovereign supply, but also, of course, has to pay tax.
What about winding back the capital gains tax discount and negative gearing concessions?
Well, again, if you tax something more, you will get less of it. I want more houses built. I want more young Australians to have a chance to buy their own home.
So is that you ruling out any changes to those? Capital gains, tax discount, negative gearing concessions. I mean, people are really interested in this stuff and they do want their politicians to answer the questions and know what they're standing for on these very specific issues. Can you say whether you, as the shadow treasurer, support winding back the capital gains tax discount or negative gearing concessions?
I've consistently said my focus is on making sure young Australians pay less income tax. Increasing taxes on other people doesn't achieve that. Working towards lowering income tax does achieve that. That's where my focus is.
All right, Shadow Treasurer Tim Wilson, thank you very much for joining us on Hack.
Thanks for having me.
And we've still got a lot of messages coming through on this. Someone saying, okay, well, Tim didn't actually answer if gas companies are being taxed enough. Another person saying, I would have thought using public transport would be heaps cheaper than driving anyway. People may even get used to it. That person talking about what to do during this fuel spike. Another person saying this issue is fed by the climate crisis, monopoly of large companies and bad policy. All my friends are talking about the fear of what is next and the impact it's having on our everyday lives. Another person saying our resources should be taxed for our benefit, not company profits. Another person saying the time is right to give a strong EV purchase subsidy to all Australians. Stimulate the renewable energy industry, take the opportunity. And another person saying, does a single politician on either side of the aisle have a basic high school level understanding of supply and demand? Or are we doomed to suffer slogans for eternity?
Hack. Good evening. There's breaking news in the hunt for the high country cop killer.
On Triple J.
They found him. Desi Freeman, the fugitive who killed two police officers in Victoria last year, has been shot dead after 7 months on the run. A three-hour standoff ended what is being called Australia's biggest ever tactical police operation to find him. Are you surprised by this development, that they found Desi or that he was still alive? Message in 0439 757 555. And is that the end of this story? April McLennan's been looking into it.
I confirm that this morning Victoria Police fatally shot a man as a result of the operation into the shooting of two police officers.
More than 200 days after he shot dead two police officers and injured a third, self-described sovereign citizen Desi Freeman has been shot dead himself.
Don't put me on air, please. I am just a camo. 1, 2, 3, 4.
At a breaking news media conference today, Victoria's Police Commissioner Mike Bush wouldn't give all the details.
Should it be confirmed that the deceased is Freeman, this brings closure to what was a tragic and terrible event.
But that has been confirmed by police sources and by accounts from people living near where Desi Freeman was discovered.
Well, I picked it as a shot that probably kilometred down the road.
They say he was shot dead by police around 8:30 this morning.
Definitely not regular, because there was one helicopter circling the area and I heard a loud speaker and a siren.
A recap. So last August, 10 police officers went to the property near Paul Punker in Victoria's High Country where Desi Freeman was living.
To execute a search warrant, which the ABC can confirm is related to historical sex offences, before Mr. Freeman allegedly ambushed them.
In the ambush, Detective Leading Senior Constable Neil Thompson and Senior Constable Vadim Divat-Hotar were killed. The 56-year-old gunman then fled into some pretty remote bushland.
This is a massive manhunt. It's Australia's largest tactical operation.
I'm not surprised they can't find him, given its dense bushland.
Back in September, hundreds of mourners turned out for the funerals of the police officers, remembering Vadim Divat-Hotar.
He was my very own superhero. He was my Batman.
And Neil Thompson.
I don't want to live life without you, and I don't want to finish our dreams on my own.
Desi Freeman was a disability pensioner who was born Desmond Philby. He was part of the Sovereign Citizen Movement and had a history of attacking people in authority.
Because they are filthy, corrupt, disgusting, lawless predators.
He'd previously tried to arrest a magistrate and was linked to an attempt to have former Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews tried for treason. Last month, police launched a new search for him.
We have done extensive searching of the caves, the mines, the huts, the rivers. We are comfortable that we don't believe he is here.
At one point, they even said they thought he was dead.
There has not been any proof of life since the 26th of August.
The standoff commenced early this morning when we made an appeal for the person inside that premises to come out.
At the media conference today, Commissioner Bush said Freeman was hiding out in what they described as a cross between a container and a very long caravan.
We strongly believe, yet to be confirmed as well, that he was armed.
And he was a long way from where he was last spotted, at a property near Wolwa on the New South Wales border, nearly 200 kilometres from Pulpunkka.
We're very keen to learn who, if any, but I'm sure some, actually assisted him in getting away from Pulpunkka to where he was located.
For John Bird, who was the best friend of the killed police officer Neil Thompson, there's a sense of closure.
It is a good day because at least the person who caused it's not drawing breath anymore.
Hack on Triple J.
April McLennan reporting then. A lot of people interested in this story. Not just today, but over the 7 months that it has been playing out, people wondering, where is Desi Freeman? Is he still alive? Well, someone who knows plenty about fugitives and being on the run is Vince Hurley. Now, Vince is a former police officer. He's worked in all kinds of levels of policing. He's now a lecturer in criminology at Macquarie University, and he's with us now. Vince, thank you very much for joining us on Hack. Were you surprised it took so long to track Desi down?
It's a bit of a wow moment, to be honest. Yes and no. It sort of faded into the memory of most people because of what's happened globally. And then all of a sudden, you know, we find out today that he's been found and been shot. So I think from a policing perspective after 30 years, no, not really, because these investigations take a really long time. And the only other similar situation we found ourselves in, Malcolm Naden, and that's going back about 10 years ago. So they are incredibly rare. But for the duration, no, not really. But I can certainly understand it, how members of the public would feel that it is a bit of a, oh my God, you know, a bit of a wow moment and it's taken so long. But police have got thousands of pieces of information to get through.
As someone who's worked around within police yourself, do you think detectives are going to be feeling a lot of relief?
Yeah, they will feel a lot of relief for sure. There will be a lot of people around the country, for example, especially the communities down there, who will be glad that this is over. But from a policing perspective, there's nothing to say that, given the duration that he was out, you know, 6 or 7 months, Dave, there's nothing to say that he wasn't actually harboured by help by anyone. If you listen to the police conference today, they were pretty careful in what they said. So just because he's been found and now he's deceased doesn't necessarily mean this is the end of the investigation, because they could have pieces of information or intelligence, as they call it, to indicate that someone may have helped him get to where he was. So this is not the end.
How hard would it have been for Desi Freeman to survive all this time without being caught?
If someone is determined to do something, then they, you know, they have the capacity and physical fitness to do it. But don't forget, sitting behind his physical ability to be able to survive in the bush, if he did it alone, he was wedded to a political ideology of being a sovereign citizen. And that drive for him within his psyche would be phenomenal, because he would want to show the police, because he hated the police, he wanted to show or prove to the police he could outwit them. And that has a bit of a downside effect for police around the country, is that because he survived so long by himself, like 6 or 7 months, the sovereign citizen community and right-wing extremists, they'll see him as a bit of a hero, because it would be like giving the middle finger to the police and to the government to say, well, I managed to survive without 6 months. You had all the police in Australia looking for me and you couldn't do it.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese speaking with Vince Hurley, criminologist, former police officer, talking about fugitive Desi Freeman being shot dead in Victoria after being on the run for 7 months. Hearing from the Hack audience on Instagram, Damien saying, excellent work, Victoria Police. A little bit of closure for the men's families, friends and Victoria as a whole. Andrea saying, I was just thinking about Desi yesterday. I really did wonder if they would ever get him. Bizarre that how it all played out just a day after that. And then Joe saying, police are supposed to be trained to de-escalate a situation using non-lethal force. I've got questions around that. Well, we might ask Vince some of those, but Vince, it wasn't long ago police were saying that they believed Desi Freeman was dead. Could they have been using that as a bit of a tactic to flush out information?
I don't think that the police would make up something like that, because that's a pretty big call. They would have based that on the information they had at the time. And the reason I also say that is because if in future something like this happened and it came out later in the coroner's court, for example, and it will be forensically examined publicly, if it came out in the coroner's court that the police made that statement and made it up, knowing it not to be true, then no one in Australia would assist the police in any future investigations. So I think, based on my 30 years in the police and in similar situations, it would be highly, highly unlikely the police would have made that just to flush him out, because it's a massive call.
What do you think, Vince, about Desi being found almost 200 k's from where the shootings happened? Was that a surprise to you?
Yes, it was a bit of a surprise. He had a bit of a head start on the police for starters, and he knows the local area, so that would have given him pretty much an advantage. Now, if it was true that he was a prepper and he had stuff stashed away somewhere in the bush, then that would have sustained him for an extra couple of weeks. Because he was good with bushcraft or bush skills, allegedly, then he could have lived off the land to be able to travel, you know, so many hundreds of kilometres without being detected or sustain him. But just like Malcolm Naden did in Gloucester in New South Wales about a decade ago, it's nothing to say that he did not break into homes or feed or getting food or sustenance from outhouses. The place where he was found, as far as I understand, was half caravan, half container, which sort of immediately gave me the thought that it had been inhabited or it could be a weekender from people visiting.
And, I mean, police were locked in this situation with Desi Freeman for a few hours. Obviously, he was shot dead, but how rare is that? Like, are police generally trying to make sure they can apprehend someone alive?
Oh, look, as a former hostage negotiator for 8 years, absolutely. The last thing the police want to do, contrary to what some people may think, the last thing police want to do is actually have to shoot someone. The ultimate aim of negotiation process and getting Freeman is to get him before the court to answer the charges. That's what they want to do, and to convict him and get a conviction by the jury. So the fact that it was a standoff for a couple of hours indicates to me, as a former negotiator, that they were trying to reason with him to get him to surrender of his own free will.
Interesting stuff. It's great to get your take on this. Vince Hurley from Macquarie University. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Dave.
And we're almost out of time, but hearing from so many of you about fuel prices and the real impact it's having on you, someone on the text line saying it's all good for politicians to offer free public transport, but what about rural communities? We have one service station in town and they haven't had a full delivery for weeks. We've also got Ruby on the line with us. Ruby, how is all of this affecting you?
Well, we own three small businesses in southeast Queensland, and we've got multiple fuel levies from multiple suppliers that we rely on daily. So the $3 for each of our businesses that we're getting stung with daily has really started to add up and actually start impacting us.
Yeah, I can imagine all of that would start to build up after some time. We're hearing from other people who are saying, yeah, we're trying to operate a small business as well. It's just, it's really not working out. Thanks for that, Ruby. We've also got Liv with us. Liv, how are fuel prices impacting you?
I was considering actually getting rid of my private health insurance or my, just trying to keep up with all of my costs.
Wow. Oh, that's really heavy. I mean, is that something you think you're going to have to do now?
Look, I've been, maybe potentially, if things don't change, then I'm going to have to cut something.
Yeah.
And Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a tough time, Liv. I really appreciate you speaking with us and, you know, those thoughts reflected on the text line now. Someone else on the text line saying if the Liberal National Coalition wants to know why it's losing supporters, it needs to listen to their own answers, how they dodge questions and talk about what Labor is doing rather than actually just give their own answer. Talking about a gas tax, we asked the Shadow Treasurer about that in our interview, whether he supported that idea. Couldn't give us a real answer, but kind of was alluding to the fact that he didn't support it. Adam saying, someone here saying, I'm happy to pay income tax, but I'm not happy that large multinational corporations pay next to nothing. Tim Wilson cannot compare apples and oranges. Adam saying, every time there's a politician on, I never hear actual policy being discussed. Just a lot of maybe, when, possibly, and blaming other people. And that's all for Hack for now. I'll catch you next time. Hack.